Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Thursday edition of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. And during the commercial breaks, Fancy Brian, occasionally I check my emails, look for breaking headlines, you know, try to be prepared for the next hour. And I've got a headline from the campaign of U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. And, you know, here I thought Republicans didn't give a damn about working people or farmers. And then Brojo totally goes and redeems himself in this regard. Senate agrees to Johnson motion to protect Wisconsin farmers in a bipartisan vote. Everything about that sounds great, right? On Wednesday, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson offered a motion to instruct MTI and the USICA, I have no idea, to reject any proposals to prohibit the possession, acquirement, receipt, transportation, sale, or purchase of hemp, right? Legalized marijuana? No, of course not. No, he supports the mink farmers, you know, minks raised in captivity for fur production. Yeah, he's all down for the fur farmers. So we can apparently kill the minks and ship them off to China. Now, Ron, I suspect his wife might have a mink, you know, Ron being of some material means. But here is his quote, you know, looking out for the minks, or at least the mink farmers. This is truly one of the more inappropriate additions the House made to this bill to ban the farming of mink for production of fur. I have no idea why they would include it in here. It makes no sense to be included, said the senator. That means Rojo. Maybe they're not inhumane bastards. Maybe they don't see the value of killing mink to make rich people's coats. Or to, what, export the minks to other countries where, you know, the socially conscious don't really say as much. Let's say China. Here is what Rojo had to say, though, because, you know, he and I don't always see eye to eye. Actually, in Wisconsin, mink farming supports hundreds of jobs. Really? Hundreds? Statewide? Hundreds? Oh, he'll get into the specifics.
If you include the taxidermy.
Hundreds of jobs and produces exports to China. My motion is simply to instruct to reject any proposal that would ban mink farming. Well, that's sort of awkwardly spoken and written, sir, but whatever, it's Rojo. I want to thank Senators Romney, Daines, and Boozman for their support of this amendment. I urge my colleagues to support American farmers by voting in favor of this motion to instruct. He doesn't take instructions himself, clearly. A little bit more. It's almost at the point of completion. Wisconsin has the largest presence of mink farms in the country. Who knew? The 2021 Wisconsin mink farming crop. It's a crop? Like we're planting the mink pelts, hoping to grow more mink pelts? I mean, this is not exactly the same as seed corn, Senator. The Wisconsin mink farming crop was valued at $40 million and supports, and here it is, man. It's all about the 250 jobs. 250. Now, I would just contrast that. Wasn't it the Oshkosh Corporation that wanted to move like 1,000 jobs down to South Carolina? I mean, that was pretty recent. Well, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson being all about jobs and all. Well, he fought like hell for those workers, didn't he? Oh, no, he didn't. He just said Wisconsin has enough jobs. Well, I got to tell you, if these 250 mink farmers, no offense to them personally, but if the mink industry collapsed upon itself, I think the state of Wisconsin could probably assimilate 250 workers. What do you think, Fancy Brian?
I think so, especially given the fact that it's a fashion that went out of fashion, I don't know what, 100 years ago, 80 years ago? Oh, wait, we're coming back to the Roaring Twenties again. So it's a 100-year anniversary. We can all celebrate pretty much one of the largest divides in all of our history.
I would have thought Ron, more of a raccoon skin guy himself. Anyways, 250 full-time employees and 500 seasonal employees. You know, probably immigrant employees. I'm just pointing that out. You know, suddenly they're seasonable employees. Let's call them migrant employees. Yeah, you know, when it's time to harvest the mink crop, if you will. Anyways, the total Wisconsin mink pelt inventory is estimated at 1.5 million pelts. That's a lot of dead mink, with the valuation of $75 million. Support, along with Johnson, Senators Mike Lee, he's also an insurrectionist, Republican Steve Daines, less clear on him, John Boozman, all Republicans, they sent the letter, and, you know, they want to see more dead minks. Because, you know, 250 jobs statewide. But the 1,000 jobs, the manufacturing jobs, the ongoing jobs, no. Let them go to South Carolina. So anyways, wanted to update you what your senator, at least those of you listening in the great state of Wisconsin, what he's doing for you, or at least the mink farmers. If you don't count yourself amongst the mink farmers, that's because there's only like 250 of them statewide. Anyways, 844-967-2789. Wanted to talk about some other backyard politics here in the state of Wisconsin. You know, we got a big elective cycle coming down the pike, just starting to heat up. And I understand the current gubernator, Tony Evers, is keying up with the big ad spend, like $3.5 million. Seems like a lot of money to me. You know, I'm just a working stiff like you fancy. But Tony Evers, since he's using the donors' money anyways, right? He's not spending his salary, but Tony's spending a lot of money. And according to the reporting at Patrick Marley here at the Journal Sentinel, Tony Evers is casting himself as someone who works with Republicans. Tony's an aisle crosser, a consensus maker. And, you know, as far as I can tell, and the headline, I think, kind of speaks to this, Marley's headline, but he rarely talks to GOP leaders. Now, before I jump in, I would point out I did reach out through the Tony Evers for Governor campaign because, you know, he's in the political cycle now. He can also be contacted, you know, sort of two jobs, candidate and also Governor Evers. But candidate Evers has been invited back for the umpteenth time on this Fair Fair program. I'm not even going to call it a great program, although you know it's great. This Fair program. Tony, come join us. Tell us all about why you think you're the best guy to lead Wisconsin forward. Used to be our motto. I think it might still be. Well, anyways, here's the reporting of Patrick Marley. And this, you know, I always got to tread lightly because if I ever criticize the Democratic gubernator of the state of Wisconsin, everyone says, oh, you hate Tony. Well, you know what? Sometimes I'm going to be critical of him when strategically he's being a jacknut. Like perhaps this article will describe. Let me read. Democratic Governor Tony Evers is campaigning as if he works closely with Republicans who control the legislature, even though he rarely talks to legislative leaders or the host of the Devil's Advocates radio show. It's been years since I even got a high and a handshake out of Tony. But anyways, I'll leave my own personal politics out of it for a moment. The lack of communication between the first-term governor and GOP leaders has been well established, and each side has blamed the other for the situation. Overlooking their history, Evers launched a re-election ad Monday that said he worked with Republicans and Democrats to pass middle-class income tax relief. That's a lie. He did not. I'm sorry. I'm just telling you, Tony, why would you make such a claim? I mean, really, you do not have to lead your re-elective campaign in this case with a bold-faced lie. Tony, you didn't work with Republicans. You signed their budget, but they didn't communicate with you and you didn't communicate with them. You could have vetoed it. You could have tried to guide a better budget. Hell, I know he line-itemed the first Republican budget before eventually signing it. And the second Republican budget he also signed. And I think, you know, syntax-wise, he could just claim, hey, Wisconsin, you wanted a tax cut. And with my signature on the budget, I delivered a tax cut. And if I politifacted that, absolutely true. Tony Evers absolutely delivered that tax cut. And you'd still have Republicans out there bemoaning the fact, well, but that was our budget. It's not Tony's budget. Until the day he signs it, then it's all Tony Evers' budget. Right? And it's not time to relitigate how Tony could have, should have, would have dealt with the budget at the time. We know how he dealt with it. He signed it. It's his budget now. Here is what Evers is quoted from his new $3.5 million in television advertising. Folks, there's too much division in politics today. That's why I'm focused on bringing people together to get the results that matter. But that's not really true, Tony. And that's not even really the role we need you in as the governor of the state of Wisconsin. Did you hear what the president was saying yesterday, Tony? He was talking about the extreme Republicans. And it wasn't just because they're all excited about the rollback of Roe v. Wade. It was their economic policies, the kitchen table policies. You know, things like state budgets would affect. And you're leading with the lie, fella. You don't need to. There's no reason for them to take this tax strategically. Because you know what? It's disingenuous. And I don't even want Tony working with the Republicans. Not these frickin' Republicans, right? Sort of bygone era. You know, the Dale Schultz, Tim Cullen sort of friendship. I love that stuff. Those are two great former state senators in the state of Wisconsin. One a Dem, one a Republican. I love when Dems and Republicans could reach across the aisle and be friends and move things forward. But legislatively, that has not been the case here in the state of Wisconsin. And Tony Evers, as much as I fault Speaker Voss and the Republicans, they're obstructionist bastards. So why are you claiming you worked with them? Why would you even want credit for working with extremists, with negotiating with terrorists, Tony? You didn't do it. Why would you even claim it? And that's the lead to his new reelective ad campaign. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Your calls could be next. 844-967-2789.
I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.
Oh, it looks good on you, though.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You can always be a part of this big program. Join us, 844-967-2789. Now, I'd be curious what your opinion is. I've started the topic for now, subject to change at any given moment. The topic for now is the new reelective ad campaign of Governor Tony Evers. And I really want to see Tony Evers win reelection. He's the goalie, right? He's the only thing stopping the bad malfeasance of Republicans in the state of Wisconsin. And the legislative majorities are baked in the cake for another decade, man. We lost the redistricting. Not me so much, but the people in charge, well, let's just say we lost. We, democracy, Democrats, the People's Map Commission, hell, Tony Evers, throw them all in. We all lost. The only ones that really won were, you know, incumbents. Especially the Republican sort, because they're going to be incumbents as long as they want to be. So under this current circumstance, we've got Republicans basically taking Tony Evers' budget, throwing it in a shredder because they didn't use any part of Tony Evers' budget, really, burning it, and then starting over and putting forth their own budget. Okay, fair enough. You can't control the legislative powers. The Republicans do. So Tony Evers has no power over their budget except the power of the veto. Well, I think Tony should have bent him over with the power of the veto. I think Tony should have threatened to take away things like voucher schools, that UNCAP mandate. You know, we hear about Texas's Greg Abbott trying to undermine the public schools. Well, we are the start point for the undermining of the public schools through the alternative, air quotes, of school choice, of private vouchers, right? Well, that's their pet project. They all get filled up. Their political coffers all get filled up. Republicans are grand recipients of school choice money. So that's their pet issue. They got lots of donors that want them to continue to advance this uncapped mandate. Lots and lots of money we, the taxpayers, spend on parallel school districts. Tony Evers, the former superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction, and he and I have never seen eye to eye on this point. Well, Tony will just tell you, well, we can't, you know, throw all these kids out on the street. And of course, that's a disingenuous remark from Tony, at least in my opinion, because no one ever advocated for taking away the private schools and not making provision to put the kids back in the public schools. I mean, the city of Milwaukee has lost like 25% of their students, but we're still paying for that alternative education. It just diminishes the resources being given to Milwaukee public schools. And like every year or two, you know, you got some Republican legislative proposal. Let's break up the schools. Let's destroy the public schools. Well, you know, what's the old biblical thing? An eye for an eye. Tony Evers at budget time, which comes around every couple of years, well, he could threaten their pet project, the school choice, the billion-dollar uncapped mandate. He never will. He never has. Okay, fair enough. You're the governor. I'm not the governor. I'm just following your lead, sir. So Tony effectively just took the Republican budget and signed it. Fair enough. I wouldn't have. Not unchanged. And he did line item. He did financially make the last Republican budget better by line iteming more money into educational spending. Good job. I would have wanted more, but I'll take your example, sir. But now it's time to describe the work you've done. And you're leading your reelective campaign by pretending that you've got some bipartisan relationship with Republicans that you do not. Now, I would point out, look at Tony Evers when he ran for governor. And Tony doesn't have to like me, no doubt. Tony doesn't like me. I'm just fine with Tony, but he doesn't have to like me. I don't even care. It's not personal to me. I just love to do this politics thing on the radio. And I care a bunch about how we're governed. But here's the point. Tony won the primary. And then Tony won won the governor's mansion. And accepting this guy, talking about me, there were a lot of other people that were supremely qualified that maybe would have made some fine cabinet secretaries. Who's our pal from Senator Kathleen Beinhout? She comes to mind. Matt Flynn, who does a brilliant job on the mornings here, twice elected Democratic Party chair. Well, he could have been found a nice little dignitary spot. I guess I take it all back. Here we are 4 years later, and Dana Walks, who did eventually pull out of the race and endorse Tony, Dana, 4 years later, is being appointed to the Board of Regents. That is the only concession Evers ever made to anybody that ever ran against Evers. A four-year later appointment, which may or may not pass the Senate, for Dana Walks to be on the Board of Regents. So that's how he treated his own party, his political foes, if you will. And of course, you know he doesn't come around here. He doesn't put his ads here. So, you know, he's got no time for yours truly. But why lie, Tony? Why even take this tact? Let me get to the point. Republicans treated Evers' ad as revisionist history, according to the reporting of Patrick Marley. This is something Assembly Majority Leader Jim Stenicki, Republican from Kaukauna, wrote on Twitter. Why would anyone believe he'd reverse course after 3 years of pretending the legislature didn't exist? Why indeed? Why indeed? Now, my question is, why would we want him to interact with you? But why would he lead with an ad that says, yeah, get along with everyone? Tony claims, well, I talk to Republicans all the time, Tony told reporters Monday at the campaign event at the Union Training Center north of Madison. Just because I haven't spoken to Robin Voss or LeMahieu, Senator LeMahieu, doesn't mean that I don't talk to Republicans. I signed a bunch of bills within the last couple of weeks, and Republicans were there and were part of it. Our staff works with folks on the other side all the time. You know, just not the legislative leaders. You know, but the rank and file. Tony's got great relations. So he was asked to name someone. Who's your buddy? Who's your Republican friend, Tony? Tony did have an answer. Jerry Petrowski of Marathon. I talk to him regular. So anyways, that's his one Republican friend. So why not run a bipartisan ad? I love those extremists. Come back, more Devils.
I think the criticism will be dissipated as we move forward.
Talk it out, man.
I am in favor of legalizing it.
Holy mackerel, folks.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the 4 o'clock hour rolling through it. Dom joins at 5. Your phone calls, they could be a part of all of the rest of this big show. We're like halfway to the finish line. 844-967-2789. I'm about done talking about Tony Evers. Final thought. There was sort of a half-assed effort to recall Tony Evers. Do you recall? I mean, barely warranted mention because, of course, it failed. They didn't gather the necessary signatures. But Tony Evers found himself in this rare circumstance under Wisconsin recall law. Once you've been, you know, declared a candidate someone's trying to recall, you can raise unlimited money. And Tony was. He was raising big bucks. He's got quite a war chest now. We've talked about the fact he started spending it with a misleading ad, and really strategically an ad I don't even know why he's placing. Sure, get your name out, but is the claim to fame that you want to try to win re-election on the fact that you get along with extremist Republicans? I see no merit in this argument, Tony. Why? A, you don't. B, when you ran your last set of gubernatorial ads, you know, fighting off that big failed recall, your message is that time was, these Republicans have fought me tooth and nail on every action during the pandemic, especially, right? Well, this week we've now got reporting a million Americans dead from this COVID pandemic. Well, instead of talking about how you cooperated, the kumbaya, because there was no kumbaya, why don't you talk about the fact Republicans did everything they could to stall your good intentions? Republicans sued. Republicans failed to meet. Republicans did everything they could to stick it to this governor. So why would he claim otherwise, right? Strategically, why would you claim to be allies with an extremist party we need to defeat at the ballot box? What's the upside? So I don't see one. And if I'm just missing the point here, folks, you tell me, 844-967-2789. And I know there are people out there that think aspirationally, and I'm maybe one of them. I remember when Dale Schultz was a senator and Dale Cullen was a senator. And people used to get along. They'd go to lunch. They'd eat dinner. Hell, I got some Republican friends. But if they were crapping all over me, I wouldn't be going on the radio bragging about the number of Republican friends I had. And you know what? I haven't been doing a lot of dinners with my Republican buddies of late. Certainly not since this leaked decision on Roe v. Wade, because it's going to be a little bit of a, you know, an issue over hors d'oeuvres, if you will. 844-967-2789. So, Evers campaign, if you want some sound strategy, you should start listening to the greatest radio show ever. I got all kinds of advice. I got advice coming out of my butt. 844-967-2789. Speak only with your mouths, please. Joe from Madison, you're next. Welcome.
Hey, I just wanted to give a high
tell folks that in that last hour, you had probably just a dynamite interview with this woman who was looking at the power politics of pipelines. Follow the Pipeline, I believe, was the name of her book. And I would really encourage people, you can go back to the podcast and catch interviews, catch parts that you may have missed. That was
I liked the guest as well. I was unfamiliar with her work. I've only read a couple of chapters of her newest book, Follow the Pipelines. And the author's name is Charlotte Dennett. Uncovering the mystery of a lost spy and the deadly politics of the great game of oil. And I mean, this was her father's lifelong pursuit. Effectively, he was, you know, the head of foreign CIA. He was part of the pipeline policy. The only part I took issue with during the interview, Joe, and someone already brought it to my attention, is she did talk about the NATO policy and the encroachment. Like, if there's even an inch encroachment, well, that's been Russia's claim, and I hate to backstop Russia's claim without challenging her on the point.
Mm-hmm.
So I did take I had a moment's hesitation in not challenging her on Russia's take on why NATO is encroaching on them. But otherwise, I found her to be a very credible and a very smart guest.
Bring her back and talk about that. That would be a very interesting subject to look at. I would find that absolutely fascinating. So a good guest and certainly worth a return visit.
Well, here would be the only problem with that. Her booker and I didn't apparently communicate well. And I don't believe in lying about stuff on, you know, mass media, on the radio. So, you know, I'm sure I could work it out. I'm sure we could get Charlotte Dennett rebooked on this thing. That's not her fault. That's someone else's fault, right? But what I didn't come on the radio, Joe, would do is claim what a great relationship I've had with her booker and what great communications I've had with her booker, because that's not the truth, Joe.
Yeah, gotcha.
So let's talk about the current subject for just a minute. Do I go too far? Is it too much to expect that Tony Evers' first reelective campaign ad not lead with, I love Republicans, I get along great with Republicans, when everything about his history shows, no, he doesn't? Not saying it's his fault. Well, it's just not the truth, Joe.
Well, I would let that little exaggeration, fib, whatever you might want to call it, really go out the window. I wanted to point out that you were looking at the numbers that Senator Ron Johnson had in for the number of mink farmers that would benefit by help in a bill. Could you contrast that with the number of people that could get employment if we ever legalized marijuana?
Oh, that's a big number.
Medical and recreational.
Joe, that's a really big number. I would just point out a couple of the numbers of the jobs. Let's first and foremost, and I'll talk about legalized weed in just a second, but let's talk about the jobs that Scott Walker turned down in regards to a casino in the Racine Kenosha area, right? We had the Hard Rock Cafe money. Yes. They were going to give us $250 million contribution to the Bucks Arena, take the taxpayers off the hook. Well, Scott Walker instead put the taxpayers on the hook for $250 million and failed to take the 10,000 ongoing well-paying jobs, plus all the construction jobs. Scott Walker also killed the high-speed rail. You know, we hear all the time, every time someone kills a pipeline, well, there's pipeline jobs that have been killed. What about the high-speed rail jobs that got killed? No one ever complained when Scott Walker killed that, and he killed a hell of a lot of commerce and interconnectivity between very synergistic areas like Chicago, Milwaukee, and Madison. Above and beyond that.
And let's talk about rural broadband and how that was.
Well, he also killed rural broadband. That was part of Scott Walker's, you know, anti-federal government, couldn't take any Obama money. So he failed to expand broadband. There were $26 million in federal dollars, I believe, on day one. Now, he claimed that the budget was broken. That's why he had to roll out the Act 10. The budget repair bill, I think he called it. But when the federal government offered $1 billion investment in high-speed rail, $26 million in broadband, he said no to that. When the Hard Rock Cafe offered $250 million, so we, the taxpayers, didn't have to publicly fund a private endeavor in Milwaukee, the Fiserv Forum, Scott Walker said no to that. He put us, the taxpayers, on the hook for $4 billion for Foxconn, you know, for those well-paying jobs that never materialized. And of course, the coup de grace, legalizing marijuana. Everyone's been telling me for going on a decade now. I mean, I think it's been 8 years since Colorado legalized. Colorado's got a population of about 5.4 million people. The state of Wisconsin's now up to almost 5.9 million people. Similarly populated states. And Colorado's not greatly different. I mean, this is a party state we live in, Joe. Colorado generates $200 million a year in tax revenue that they put towards their schools just from legalized marijuana. Above and beyond that, once upon a time, this has been like 8 years. At that time, I think they had between 10 and 13,000 permanent jobs created by the green rush, by the marijuana industry, the legalized marijuana industry. Well, here in the state of Wisconsin, we have turned down, what, casino jobs, legal marijuana jobs. We've turned down, you know, the expanded opportunities that broadband would create. And you know, of course, our only thoughtfulness was, let's incentivize a foreign corporation to screw the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin to the tune of like $4 billion. That was their bright idea. And let's not forget, Clayfish was part of that bright idea. So anyways, yeah, I mean, I've said it for a long time, Joe. Republicans were never good at business. Certainly not those that run for higher political office. Scott Walker is crap at business. I mean, the guy was running for president with a net negative worth. The guy was in the toilet $73,000 on his FEC disclosures when he ran for president. If he can't manage his own personal budget, why would I expect him to run the federal government? This is a guy that was about, Gary, you can't grow the deficit, right? This is the guy that gave $4 billion on the back of a napkin to a foreign corporation to screw us because we got no return on that investment. And of course, now he's finally getting paid working for the Young Nazi Association, the Reagan-esque think tank out of California, where he apparently stays on the Reagan ranch and wears Reagan's old clothes.
It's a, when they talk about pocketbook issues, well, there you are. They left us. We could have had them. They're gone. You know, a lot of opportunities just thrown away. It's a sad, sad thing. And
well, shouldn't we be angry about that? Shouldn't we be angry about the Republican response to COVID in our state? I mean, people are dying because of the leadership of guys like Donald Trump and Ron Johnson. I guess Scott Walker was out of politics by then. I'm not going to blame him per se. But I mean, we've got a million dead Americans. I believe Lester Holt went on Fox News. He's an NBC, you know, anchor, and said, you know, a lot of these deaths were optional. They were Americans extending their freedom, the freedom to die. And that's what Republicans really stand for. Why? And pulling it all the way back to Tony here for a minute, Joe. Why would Tony embrace that? Why would we want Tony to embrace that? Do we want Tony to bridge the gap with these extremists? I'm not there. I think he should do just the opposite. What's your thought, Joe?
I wonder if there's some politicking that's going on there in terms of making him more palatable to hardcore Republicans. That they're
not going to vote for him, Joe.
Across him.
If you voted
probably
for
not.
Donald Trump, you're not voting for Tony Evers. Tony Evers, A, would never wear bronzer, and B, he's not a braggadocio kind of guy. He is the anti-Trump. He's a book, you know, he's a book, a bookish sort of guy.
Educator.
Yeah. Yes. He values education, and he values good relations, obviously. He's leading his reelective campaign with, you know, I get along with Republicans. I just don't think he should, not these Republicans.
Well, I admire his stance on the legalization of dope, and I just think at least it's one step forward in what could be a really productive run of jobs and a helpful addition to our state's economy and to those people who need medical marijuana. So I give him that. I absolutely give him that.
Well, Joe, he's come to that position now. You know, strangely, he was, I believe, the only Democrat that ran for governor that didn't run on a platform of I'll legalize marijuana. Now, Tony has obviously come to that advocacy. And Scott Walker, if you check the old tape, Scott Walker still blames legalized marijuana referendum for his loss to Tony Evers by like 31,000 votes.
We got some friends. I looked to Brian Stevenson, and he knows the others that contributed to that effort. But putting legalized marijuana on the referendum ballots, now they were non-binding because obviously Tony won, and these referendums almost universally won, and we still don't have legalized marijuana. But I don't want Tony to tell me he's going to go puff, puff, pass with these Republicans at 420 if that's not his intent. Although, Ron Johnson, you know, right to try. Come try some. Maybe you'd lighten up. More Devil's Advocates on the other side. More of your phone calls as well. 844-967-2789. Should we try to get along with the other side or just smack them rhetorically upside the head?
I don't like to get into taking sides.
We really don't know if I have the authority to do that.
On many sides. On many sides.
Having a great time.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. It's not dark side here, man. We got sunshine in glorious Madison, Wisconsin. My little buddy, my big buddy, Fancy Brian, working in the Shaw. I got Evan here with me. Got you on the phones as well. Join us, 844-967-2789. Here's a pal, Bill from Oconomowoc. Welcome back, Bill. What do you got?
Hey, first of all, Mike, I really like the rant you're going off on. You were speaking so eloquently, I said to myself, this guy's got to throw his hat in the ring sooner or later. You've got to.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to.
Yeah.
You've got the sounding
the
board.
Day after my wife divorces me, Bill. That's not going to happen, my friend.
Or be a campaign manager. You've got what it takes, and you've got the integrity and the diplomacy. So think about it. But let's
Well,
move on.
Bill, I'll you give you talking, one of those two. Yeah? I'd like to think I have a strong, strong sense of integrity. But diplomacy, not so much.
No, you do have diplomacy because any guy like you that can go on Fox, it takes diplomacy to get there.
I just didn't have the courage to get thrown off, Bill, but I appreciate the kind words, man.
Don't sell yourself short, and I'm very serious on this. But here we go on COVID and the unnecessary lives lost.
Yes, sir.
This is a fact, I believe. Nobody said you could sue the tobacco companies. Well, we all know how that went down. Well, now with this COVID, that's called negligent homicide. And if you read chapter and verse on negligent homicide, that's exactly what they did. Exactly. They willfully, knowingly put people in harm's way when they knew it could cause death or permanent disability, and they did it. There will be a group of young lawyers, or maybe old lawyers, that are sitting in a tavern right now and say collectively, how are we going to go at this? And they will. And they will. And part of that is, if I work for Fox, you know, Fox will always send a message out with no teeth in it, no beef, no meat in a sandwich. People start talking like that, and I'll guarantee you, the Foxy friends are going to get a little nervous because Dominion hit them with a huge lawsuit, and if they get a COVID lawsuit, look out. They could be out of the system, and you know that. I know that, and we know how lawyers work. I guarantee you there's a bunch of people talking, and as we speak, how are we going to capitalize on this? Look at the pain and suffering, families that have been destroyed. People taking ivermectin, that is negligent homicide.
Yes, to my opinion, it would be. It would also be my opinion, Bill, and I'm no legal scholar. I think it'd be damn hard to prove. I think it would be absolutely hard to hold anyone culpable. A Ron Johnson, even when he's advocating for ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or hell, what's he saying now? Although he's sort of walked this back, he's saying, you know, perhaps the vaccines cause AIDS. Well, that doesn't seem like the right sort of encouragement to, you know, let's say elderly voters that might be due a booster shot. You could get the AIDS. Well, that could be dissuasive, if you know what I mean. If I believed U.S. Senator Ron Johnson and the accuracy of what he says, although I seldom do, you know, this is also the guy that advocated for Listerine to kill the COVID. You know, don't take your medical advice from an albino guy from Las Vegas. That's all I'm saying. But you would be hard-pressed to prove that his words had a direct and culpable effect on someone else's death. Now, let's say Donald Trump said, go kill that guy. Go stick poison in that guy. Sure, there's a cause and effect. Whether or not he specifically stuck the poison in, yeah, he clearly created the environment. He directed it. But in terms of was his gross negligence and the fact that he knew the truth but he lied to the American people, can you prove that in a culpability way in a federal court in a civil case and then make it hold up through the U.S. Supreme Court bill? Because that's where it would end up, right? I mean, any sort of class action lawsuit, any sort of lawsuit that was advancing towards payout, let's just say, if there was a positive award to a plaintiff on the district court or even the appellate court level, well, it would be a near certainty that the Republican supermajority and the U.S. Supreme Court would basically overturn that bill. And I used to have a lot of trust in the U.S. Supreme Court, even when it was a 5-4 Republican majority, even when Roberts was the chief. I still thought, you know, on most issues, the courts get it right. There is juris independence, you know, separate but equal branches. I no longer believe that bill. And if it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court, it's going to get shot down. So that's just my thoughts. 844-967-2789. What a bubble burster. Usually I leave that role for Dom. You know, just harshing people's buzz, all that kind of stuff. That's sort of Dom territory. I hate to be that guy. 844-967-2789. Jake, pardon me, Jack from Milwaukee. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon. Welcome to, I'm glad that you're back on the airways again.
Me too, Jack.
I just wanted to add on a little bit how useless this clayfish is. I want to point out, add on a little more. Before she took office with Scott Walker, she was lieutenant governor at the time. Here she was briefed. They both were briefed that this computer system for the unemployment was archaic and had to be replaced. And this could have been done, but because the Obama administration, that would make them look good. So they sat there and they, for 10 years, they'd done nothing. Now comes the pandemic, and then they turn around and blame Tony Evers. So anyhow, I just wanted to point that out. And then here she wants to be a governor. I mean, she's useless. She's worthless. She's a do-nothing. Anyhow, that's all I had to say. Well, and I'm glad you guys are back. I heard you were back when I read the green sheet. Otherwise, I didn't even know you were on the air at all.
When did you find me in the green sheet, man? In the Journal Sentinel?
Yeah, it was in the Journal. That I read a while back. It's an old paper. I'd have to look it up once. And I just happened to
go. Go
it
find it for me, Jack. Save it, and then mail it to
save
me.
Save it? Oh, yeah. You. Okay, I'll see if I can dig it up for you.
I've tasked you now. My wife does that. I come home at night, Jack. I appreciate you listening, man. Glad you found us again. In the green sheets and on the radio. But I feel like I did what my betrothed, my beautiful wife, occasionally does to me. And I love her, so I always want to be an obedient husband-ish. But, you know, I come home, and she'll look at me, and she doesn't say, oh, honey, how was your day? She goes, oh, you know, our dogs have really had a long day home alone. It'd be sweet and swell if you'd take them for a walk. And it's not that I, you know, mind walking, and of course I'll take them eventually, but I'm like, oh man, how about my rough day? You know, I've been stuck inside all day. I got fleas. You know, I got it tough too. Well, maybe not the fleas part. No telling though. You know, I do have a little too much integrity. If I had fleas, I'd tell you. Come back with us, the Happier Happy Hour. Dom's joining the party. You could be next. 844-967-2789.
I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.
What would you say you do here?
Why not gargle?
We really don't know if I have the authority to do that.